Titus chapter 2. Titus chapter 2. I'm concerned this morning still with our families, our family relationships, husband and wife, parents and children. We looked at some of this last week, and I know we didn't exhaust the subject. So let's go back and read through and perhaps get a little more detail. Our families are in danger. Our families are in danger. If our families are not strong, if our families are not faithful to one another, if our families are not committed to being a family, if our families are not committed as a family unit to serving the Lord, then there's a good possibility that the family will break apart. If families begin to break apart, churches begin to decline. It has an effect on the community and the nation as a whole. There's no doubt about that. Titus chapter 2. Paul is writing this letter to a minister named Titus. He says in the first verse of chapter 2, "But speak thou the things which become sound doctrine." When we think about doctrine, we often think about some of those foundational principles, such as salvation, such as the Trinity, or we might think about redemption, sanctification, justification. Doctrine, those foundational principles, the fact that God is the creator, the fact that the Son of God is the eternal Word of God, and He came into the world and became a man, and He died for the sins of His people. All those wonderful things that have to do with what God, by His grace and mercy and because of His love, has done for us. Doctrine. Paul says to Titus, you speak some things to accompany that sound doctrine, that would adorn sound doctrine. What we believe are foundational principles that the Bible teaches. Those things ought to be seen in our lives. We ought to demonstrate, manifest. We ought to adorn those things. It's hard to see things such as, for example, predestination or election or even redemption and some of those things. It's hard to see that lived out in a person's life. And what we're talking about is all of those things concerning what God has done for us, we ought to demonstrate that in our lives. We ought to show our gratefulness, our gratitude, our thanksgiving. We ought to show our love. We ought to mirror to the best of our ability in our lives what God has done for us. I ought to treat you with compassion because God has been compassionate towards me. I ought to show mercy towards you because God has shown mercy towards me. I ought to speak to you in a gracious way because that's how God treats me, in a gracious way. Paul says those things that are sound doctrine ought to be accompanied by some other things, even things like family relationships, husband and wife relationship, parent and child relationship. We, as family, you know what's so strange? It seems that it's easier for us to treat members of our own families in a not so favorable way than it is others around us. It seems that those in our own family, those are the ones that we take them for granted. I take my wife for granted. I speak harshly sometimes to my children in a way that I don't think I would speak to somebody that I work with. And that ought not to be. So the foundational principles that we understand the Bible to teach, and again, primarily what God has done for us, those things ought to be seen or demonstrated even within our family. Speak thou the things which become, which accompany, which adorn, which demonstrate sound doctrine. Put these things on. Wear them. That the aged men, here's some of those things, that the aged men, the mature men, and yes, the term has a degree of godliness connected with it as well. We can be mature in some ways, but maybe not mature in other ways, you see. The aged men are those who are mature in a spiritual sense. Far from perfect, obviously, we know that. But godly men, mature in the faith, mature in the spirit. That the aged men be sober. Here's some things, Titus, that you're to teach. You more mature men, you're to be sober. You're to be clear thinking. You're to be level-headed. You're to be sober. You're not to have all of the things of the world and the culture and society around you having such an influence and an effect on the way you think that you would treat people irrationally or in a rash way or in a harsh manner. You're to be sober. You're not to jump to conclusions. You're to be thinking with a clear and level mind. The aged men be sober. Grave. Oh, it's good and it's fun and it's uplifting sometimes to have a good humor. You ask my wife, I don't have a whole lot of humor about me, and what I do have is kind of dry. But it's good. The humor, nothing wrong with being humorous. Nothing wrong with a little fun like that, in that manner. Good, clean fun. You know what I'm talking about. But then there's to be, when it comes down to business, we're to be serious about it. When it comes down to those things which are important, we're to be serious about it. We don't take the situations that when we're out there and just kind of maybe cutting up a little, having a little fun and enjoying some good, clean humor. We're not to make that kind of situation be the same as, for example, as we met this morning with the deacons before church. We had a meeting and talk about things. That wasn't the time for much humor and fun and frolic. Okay, those things were serious things. That was a serious time. We're to be grave. Temperate, he says. Temperate. We're to be in control. We're to be in control of our emotions. We're to be in control of our temper itself. We're to be in control of our minds and our bodies, temperate. And he says, sound in faith, in charity, in patience. Sound in faith. Why is it so important that the aged men, the mature men among us, why is it so important that they be sound in the faith? Why is it so important that they be sound in charity and in patience? It's because, men, brethren, you have some young men watching you. You have some younger men observing you. You are setting an example. However you conduct yourself, you're setting the example. Whatever you do, that is the example that our young men are seeing. And we're going to see that Paul addresses the young men a little bit on further down. It is so important that we, as the older and more mature men, or at least we who are older that are striving for some maturity, some spiritual maturity, that we be sound in these things, that we be solid, that we be grounded, that we're not instable, that we're not, our emotions are not out of control, where we act irrational at one in these occasions, and then on another occasion we seem to be pretty stable. We shouldn't be acting up and down. We should be in control. We have young men watching us, and if they see that it's okay for an older, more mature man to be doing this or to say be saying that or to be acting in this way, then they're going to think, well, that's okay for me to do it. It's okay for brother so and so. It's okay for me. You see, there's a grave responsibility that we have as aged men. Now, you think about that and apply that, brethren. You think about it as where you're, where you are. Where you're a husband, you're a father, whatever you are, you're a grandfather, whatever position you're in. You think about that. In the church, the times that you spend in the assembly of the saints, there are younger men watching and observing and learning from what you do and what you say. Verse 3, the aged women likewise. The aged women. The same principles apply to the aged women, the more mature women. Sisters, you are to be, he says, be in behavior as becometh holiness. I dare say that there is even more responsibility laid upon women than there is men. And when you think about it, maybe that shouldn't be, and maybe I've got the wrong view about it. But you think about it. Women as wives and mothers, I think they have far more influence on the world than us men do as fathers and husbands. They have far more influence. He says that your behavior should be in such a way that it says become holiness. It adorns. It demonstrates holiness. Sisters, you have young ladies watching you. You have young women. Young ladies who will very, very soon be young women. They're watching you. They're observing you. They're learning from you. Whether you have children or not, there are younger ladies around you watching and observing. The aged women doesn't necessarily mean that you are a mother or a wife, but you are an older, more mature woman, and the younger ones are looking up to you. What a grave responsibility we all have, aged men and aged women alike. I want to read this to you from 1 Peter chapter 3 that goes along with this. It goes along with the women being in behavior that becometh, or that is demonstrating holiness, that adorns holiness. Your behavior should be such that shows to those around you that you are trying to live a godly life. Now look in 1 Peter chapter 3. Peter addresses wives, and particularly in the beginning of this chapter, chapter 3, 1 Peter chapter 3, Peter is addressing wives whose husbands have not yet been won over by the word, okay? He's addressing wives whose husbands, he uses the phrase, do not obey the word, if any obey not the word. And Peter is saying to these women, you live a manner of life that is pure, that is holy, that would demonstrate holiness, because based on your, he uses the phrase in verse 2, chaste conversation, the husbands are going to observe your manner of life. They're going to pay attention. They're going to take note. They may be disagreeable at times. They may not want you going here or going there. They may not come to church with you. But they're taking note. They are seeing your manner of life. They are observing you. And he says in verse 3, I'm jumping ahead. He says in verse 1 that they may be won without the word. They may be won over by your manner of life. Where they may not be sitting in the assembly of the saints with you and hearing the word, but yet they may be won over by your manner of life. So just because, and I think what Peter is especially saying to wives in these situations is, don't try to live one way at church and out there in public, wherever, and then try to live another way at home. just for the sake of your husband. You be consistent and you live that chaste and holy and godly manner of life. And your husband might be won over simply by your manner of life. But what I really wanted out here was verse 3. He says, who's adorning? Who's adorning? That which you are decorated with. Talking about women, talking about wives especially, who's adorning, let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair and of wearing of gold or of putting on of apparel. That is not what should be somebody's focus when they see you. Ladies, now, don't get me wrong. I love to see my wife with hair fixed and with a little jewelry and makeup, whatever, nice clothes. All you husbands do. All you husbands like to see that in your wives. And honestly, the woman, the female, is the most beautiful of all of God's creation. The female is the most beautiful of all of God's creation in all the world. And I'm talking about beauty. I'm not talking about from the standpoint of lust or anything like that. The woman is a beautiful creation. The most beautiful. When others see you, women, what draws their attention first ought not to be the clothes you wear and the jewelry you got hanging on you. And it says wearing of gold and the clothes and all the hair and all that. That's well and good, but that ought not to be the most outstanding characteristic that people know you for. They ought not to know you because of how you dress and how you look. They ought to know you best by your manner of life, by the way you act, by the way you talk. That's what should stand out more than all of the external. He says, verse 4, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit. Now, men, you can't take that phrase and go to the extreme with it and tell your wives to be quiet. That's what the Bible says. You're to be quiet. No, that's not what the Bible says. But the Bible does say, women, you're to have a meek and quiet spirit. Calm. Meek. Humble. I'd like to ask the question. And we could ask this of men, you young men, and you young ladies. And also, you aged men and you aged women, you need to pay attention to the question, because the way that you have taught these younger ones, the way you've conducted yourself around these younger ones, is having a great deal of influence on how young women and young men will answer this question. What do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to be when you grow up? What is at the top of your priority when you become an adult? What do you want to be? Now, how we raise our children, where we place our priorities, what we have taught them, what we have shown them by example, will have more influence than anything else on how our young men and young women will answer that question. Young women, it's okay. In fact, it's scriptural. So that means it's better than anything else. It is the best answer. It is scriptural for you young women to have as your top priority as you become an adult to be a godly woman. First and foremost, before anything else, to be a godly woman. If you get married, it's to be a godly wife. You have children, then it's to be a godly mother. You may not get married. You may not have children. But you're still... First priority is to be a godly woman. You may be a school teacher. You may become a doctor. You may become a lot of things in the business world or professional world as far as what job, what occupation you may have. But when you become a wife, things change. When you become a mother, things change drastically. When you become a wife, your husband moves into that. Now, hear me out. Tell me from Scripture if I'm wrong. When you become a wife, your husband moves into the top priority. He takes that spot of the top priority in your life as far as relationships that you have. He's not less important than your job. Whatever you may be doing otherwise, your husband is more important. Now, I know there's going to be times where you have to go do this, or you may have to go do that. Your husband's not going along with you. That's not what I'm talking about. Your emphasis in life is no longer, well, your emphasis in life now is your husband. When you become a mother, your emphasis becomes your children. That takes the top priority. So what do you want to be when you grow up? Young men, what do you want to be when you grow up? You're going to be a provider. So that ought to be in your mind at a very early age. Yes, what do I like? Where are my interests? But how am I going to be able to provide for my wife? And if the Lord blesses me to get married, and then if the Lord blesses us to have children, how am I going to provide for my family? And in all of that, and in all of what you may pursue, your top priority is still to be a godly man. It's right and it's scriptural to have that as your top priority. To be godly men and to be godly women. Peter says concerning women that you're to let the hidden man of the heart be that which stands out. Not that which is corruptible, but that which is incorruptible. The hidden man of the heart. A meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. The world will tell you a lot of things that the world says is valuable. The world says that a lot of things are valuable, are important, are your top priorities. God says, this is of great price. What is it? A meek and quiet spirit and wearing ornaments of grace. That is in the sight of God of great price. Now, which is more important? What the world says is valuable or what God says is valuable? The answer goes without saying. Back in Titus. Mothers, fathers, grandmothers, grandfathers, are we teaching our children these things? And again, you may not have children. You may not be married. Can younger men and women see these things in your life as well? Because again, like I said, we're all setting the example for somebody. By our manner of life, by our manner of speech. Titus says back in chapter 2, verse 3, the aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness. Not false accusers. Okay, not false accusers. Now we talked this last Wednesday night some about the tongue. And about being in control of the tongue and not being in control of the tongue. And some of the fallout and the consequences that come about by not being in control of our tongues. And I want to read a few Proverbs. We may have looked at some of these Wednesday night, but I want to read them again. 18th chapter of Proverbs. You don't have to turn there if you don't want to, but Proverbs 18, verse 8 says, the words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down into the innermost parts of the belly. Aged women. Now, I don't know why Paul specifically included this as a characteristic that you're to avoid. Don't want to speculate, because I'll get in trouble if I do. But Paul says, you're not to be false accusers. You're to be in control of what you say. You're not to speak rashly and harshly. You're not to speak before you think. Now, none of us should do that. We're not to repeat things if we're not absolutely certain that it's the truth. And sometimes even when we do know that it absolutely is the truth, we still ought not to repeat them. Aged women, you're not to be false accusers. Now, that doesn't mean that you aged men have the right to do that. Not given to much wine. There's a lot of other things. Let me read some more Proverbs. Let's just slow down. We're not in any hurry. Whatever we don't get to might come back next week. Chapter 12 of Proverbs. Chapter 12, verse 18. Here's why it's so important. Now this. Let me share a thought with you. And this is a. This has come about as a result of society in general. For some reason, when men speak in ways that they ought not to speak, nobody thinks much about it. It's almost like, well, it's expected. You know, it just doesn't. So often, when men speak in ways that they ought not to speak, nobody's surprised. But when women speak in ways that they ought not to speak, well, it shouldn't be that way. Men ought to be held just as accountable for their manner of speech as women are. We should expect the highest degree of holiness and godliness in our manner of speech, men and women alike. Men and women alike. Chapter 12, verse 18 says, "There is that speaketh like the piercings of a sword." There are things that can come from our mouths that are like the piercings of a sword. But, he says, the tongue of the wise is health. We ought to be very concerned about our manner of speech. Now, I'm connecting this especially with women. Women as mothers, as wives. Women as those who are setting the example for younger women around them. All of that is wrapped up in this thought of being not false accusers. You want one or two more? You probably don't, but I'm going to share them with you. In Proverbs 10, chapter 19, we looked at this Wednesday night. Chapter 10, verse 19. It says, "In the multitude of words there wanteth not sin." Now, we all know of people, men and women alike, who like to talk a lot. Who just kind of, pardon me, but just run off at the mouth a lot. Well, we all know people like that. And it's not pleasant. Not pleasant to be around, is it? The wise man says that in the multitude of words, there's no lack. In other words, there's no wanting. There's no lack for the opportunity or for the potential for it to become sin. We're going to say something that is not right. We're going to say the more we talk, the more we just run off, rattle on. A lot of people like to hear themselves talk. But sooner or later, they're just talking and talking and talking, never slowing down enough to think about what they're saying. And sooner or later, they're going to say something hurtful. They're going to say something which is not true. They're going to say something that even if it is true, it's still not worth repeating. In the multitude of words, there wanteth not sin. But he that refraineth his lips is wise. It's wise sometimes just to keep our mouths closed. It's wise always to consider the matter, as another proverb says, to consider the matter before we open our mouths. Okay, he says the aged women should not be false accusers. He also says that the aged women are not to be given to much wine. We talked about this a little bit, I think, last Sunday. This is not a, I'm not going to go into the a discourse on wine and drinking or partaking of wine. What Paul is saying to Titus, you need to teach these things, that the aged women are not servants or enslaved to much wine. Because much wine will have an adverse effect on our decisions. Yeah, it has an adverse effect on how we act. But to be enslaved or dependent on not only wine, but dependent on anything else, runs the potential of having an effect on the decisions we make, on our rationale. So we're not to be given to much wine. Then he says, to teachers of good things. Aged women, you're to be teachers of good things. Teachers of good things. Can I share another proverb with you out of Proverbs 6? Proverbs chapter 6. Ladies, sisters, you're supposed to be teachers of good things. Proverbs chapter 6. I want to begin reading with verse 20. My son, Proverbs 6, verse 20. My son, keep thy father's commandment and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thy heart and tie them about thy neck. When thou goest, it shall lead thee. What are we talking about? We're talking about those things which your mother and father teach you. When thou goest, it shall lead thee. When thou sleepest, it shall keep thee. And when thou awakest, it shall talk with thee. What do we see in that? Those things, mothers and fathers, grandmothers, grandmothers, all you, aged women, aged men alike, the things that we teach, whether it's by word or by example, those things ought to be something that our young kids, children, young adults, that our children can take hold of, that they can find security in, that they can find stability in, they can find safety in, they can find comfort in all aspects of life. He says, when you go, it'll be there with you. When you're asleep, it'll stay with you. When you're awake, it'll walk with you, it'll accompany you. We absolutely must be teaching our children by word and by example things that they can embrace that will accompany them wherever they go in life, wherever they go. Teachers of good things. Here's some of the good things that they ought to teach. And I'm going to have to stop in a minute. Verse 4 says that they may teach the young women. In fact, I'm going to stop right there. That they may teach the young women. The reason that we are to pay particular attention to what is being taught within the assembly of the saints, whether it's from the pulpit, whether it's when we come together to study the scriptures together, we are to pay particular attention to the things that are taught so that we as older men and women can teach our younger men and women. How else are they going to learn? And if they're not learning from us, and if they're not being taught within the assembly of the saints, if not being taught within the church, something else is going to fill that gap. Something else is going to fill that void. And it'll be the culture around us. It'll be society. It'll be the world around us if these things are not taught here within the church.